Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend edition. Also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. On this weekend show, we're going to be jumping around a fair bit. We're going to start off by recapping some of the market moves this week, as well as some of the underlying economic data that we received more internationally. And then we'll move into a bit more of a trader session with one of our favorite technical traders and fund managers. And then for all the precious metals bugs out there, tail end of the show, going to be focused a bit more on the big picture narrative for the precious metals. We are kicking off the show with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. Now, Mark, let's start off with a quick recap, more in terms of central banks, where we had the Bank of England hike by 50 basis points. That is largely being considered a bit of a surprise. They went a bit more than the market expected. We also had a bunch of Fed officials talking about the fact that there probably are still two more rate hikes coming this year. Let's start off with central bank news then in terms of the Bank of England. Any takeaways from their hike, please, Mark?
Sure. So you're right. The Bank of England hiked rates. That 50 basis points took people a little bit by surprise. Now there's four meetings left in the year, and the market has another 100 basis points priced in. So this was sort of a down payment, like you say, higher than expected inflation, strong labor market. Bank of England tried to get ahead of some expectations. Unfortunately, it wasn't proved very effective, as sterling initially rallied on it, but then sold off and closed lower yesterday on Thursday after the Bank of England hike, and it's lower here today. And of course, it wasn't the only central bank that hiked rates by 50 basis points last week. So did Norway, and Switzerland hiked rates by 25 basis points. So now for the month of June, the major central banks' rate decisions are over, and now we're going to shift back and focus on economic data, whether survey data or next week the inflation data.
Well, Mark, looking at the inflation trends, there has been a meaningful drop in inflation over the course of this year, but now we're getting down to that point where it's going to be harder and harder for the Fed or any central bank to get their inflation down below, you know, going to that 2% or sub 2% does seem like a pretty big gulf from where we're at now. Do you think it's a situation where even though most market expectations are that they're still going to have a hike in July and maybe one more small hike after that, is it a situation where they may have to admit that there's going to be a new normal in inflation? Or do you think they'll hold their ground like they have been and say they're going to get it down to 2% inflation or bust?
Yeah, you raise a good point, because while the U.S. inflation has eased, just this week we saw U.K. inflation and core inflation at that, excluding food and energy, rise to new cyclical highs. We saw the same thing out of Japan. The May CPI, when you exclude food and energy, also rose to new cyclical highs. So I'd say part of the reason why the dollar is finishing the week on a bid note is that the U.S., the Federal Reserve, even though it was a bit slower than, say, the Bank of England or Norway to begin raising interest rates, the market has more confidence the Federal Reserve's going to be able to withstand the rate hikes than the Eurozone and the UK, for that matter. I think that typically, if you're an official, I think that you don't want to change your benchmark, like 2% inflation that you mentioned, until you get there. Otherwise, the danger is you lose credibility. It's sort of like the New York Mets. You know, they had a couple of years ago, they had the least home runs of any baseball team in the majors. What they could have done was buy better talent. They could have juiced up the ball or cheated like some other baseball teams have done. But what they did was moved in the fences to make it easier to hit home runs. I think that the Federal Reserve would lose credibility if they brought in their benchmark 2% and raised it, say, okay, we'll live with 3% inflation. So I think it's unlikely to do that anytime soon. The best time to do something like that is when the Fed inflation is very low and they want to convince investors that they're serious about the 2% inflation target. That would be the time to raise the inflation when you're not delivering on it yet. But now they're exceeding it and they lose credibility. Any central bank, I think, would lose credibility moving their goalposts because they haven't achieved them.
Oh, I love that analogy, Mark. Let's also talk then about what we heard from Jerome Powell, some other Fed officials, and compare it to what the market is pricing in. Again, it seems like the Fed officials want to drive home the fact that, yes, they paused, or we could call it skipped a hike last meeting, but they're still saying that there's two more rate hikes coming. The market isn't exactly pricing that in. There is a bit of a discrepancy here. How are you viewing how the market is taking the Fed comments this week?
Yeah, so your point is valid, I think. I'm looking at the January Fed Funds Futures contract because that's going to be the cleanest read for December, which is skewed by the year end and the holiday. And that January Fed Funds contract is currently yielding 5.25. That contract settles at the average effective rate of the Fed funds in the cash market. Right now, that effective average is 5.07. If we believe that the Federal Reserve is going to hike rates two more times, that would mean fair value is closer to 5.57. And currently, that January contract is yielding 5.25. That means that it's priced in 18 basis points roughly of the first hike that the Fed signaled and nothing of the second hike. So we got these two strong, powerful forces, the market and the Federal Reserve. Earlier this year, when the Federal Reserve said they were not going to cut rates, the market thought they would. Over time, the market converged to the Fed. Now the Fed takes another couple of steps, or they've indicated they'd take another couple of steps higher. This has produced this new gap then with the market. My guess would be that the market's going to again converge with the Fed rather than the other way around. And as the market does converge with the Fed, short-term U.S. interest rates will rise, and that'll give the dollar greater support. It's not going to be a huge bull market for the dollar again. I think the dollar peaked last September and October. But the euro got up to a little bit through 110 this week, and I think we can head back down to around 107. Sterling got above 128, and I think we can go back down towards 125. These are relatively modest moves in foreign exchange, and it's just as the interest rate markets adjust their expectations more aligned with the Fed. And I think the big step could happen next week when we get the personal consumption deflator in the U.S. And what it's likely to show is the headline is running at roughly, if we annualize the first few 5 months of the year, the headline rate will be running about half of what it was in the first 5 months of last year. But the core rate, which the Fed talks about, is going to be running, if anything, slightly higher than it was in the first 5 months of last year. And that, I think, will drive home the point why the Federal Reserve is committed to raising rates.
Well, Mark, when you look at what's happening in the currency markets and even with other central banks, some of the strength in the dollar and some of those moves in the other currencies could also be explained by some of the general weak international data we've been seeing out of Europe, out of Australia, out of a lot of countries, that they're still having, as you mentioned earlier, issues with inflation. We have other readings coming out. What do you make of some of the weakness globally?
Yeah, I think that, we've seen the manufacturing sector continuing to suffer. Not just we see that in the U.S., but we see this, in most of the other countries, those flash June PMI readings. All the countries that reported the flash PMI, so Japan, Australia, Germany, France, the U.K., and the U.S., all had the manufacturing sector PMI below 50, which is this boom-bust level separating like expansion from contraction. So I think this is partly a global phenomenon. And I think that we're still like coming to grips with the post-COVID economy and responding to that, where in the early days, COVID and its aftermath, a big demand for goods. And that has slowed down. And I think that's the real drag. But the strength is still coming from, or what strength we do have, is coming from the service sector. And that's important because the service sector is really the bulk of the high income economy is driven much more by services than the goods sector. But I think you're right that the fear in the market, I think, is that the weakness of the economy is going to stymie or limit the central bank's ability to raise interest rates. And if the real economy doesn't stymie the central bank, then spurring a financial crisis, like a larger bank stress issue like we had in the U.S., we've got those bank share stocks again selling off this week pretty sharply.
Yeah, a bunch of interesting data that came out this week. But one thing that really caught my attention is what happened in the crypto space with Bitcoin and some of the larger institutions, well-respected institutions that are at least filing some of the paperwork to start up ETFs, even a new exchange that could, and that's a big could, bring in some bigger institutional money. Again, all this is just paperwork being filed. But Mark, how big of a story is this for the cryptocurrency sector?
Yeah, and I think you're right that, you know, since the middle of April, so for the last 2 months, until this past week or so, Bitcoin's been trending lower. And I see a lot of my friends in the media, reporters, journalists, being sort of squeezed out of jobs at some of those places that used to cover crypto. And I think that crypto is sort of falling out of favor, even among the crypto crowd. But I think that two things have happened. One is, as you say, some of these new applications for the SEC to have a crypto ETF, a Bitcoin ETF, I should say. Previously, the SEC turned it down, but maybe the market's matured enough that they could give permission this time. I'm a bit skeptical, but we'll have to see. But so that's one thing, is possibility of ETF for Bitcoin, and that, of course, rekindles interest. And the other thing is more of a technical development. As I mentioned, the Bitcoin's been trending lower since around the middle of April. And this week, we broke out of that downtrend. And, you know, the market, even though it's easy to go short in the capital markets as it is to go long, unlike equity markets, but we all like bull markets better than bear markets. And the fact that that Bitcoin broke out of this downtrend, this two-month downtrend this week, and exploded really to new highs, $31,410 this morning. I think that just brings people in on, we talk about fear of missing out when it comes to, say, the mainstream stock market or something like that. But I think there's also there in the crypto space, just as people are giving up on it, it rallies and brings us back into it.
Mark, just to follow up on that comment, you brought up that, you know, when things break down in correlations, like we were seeing Bitcoin and Ethereum and some of the other cryptos really trading like tech stocks for the longest time, and that correlation has kind of started to break down. And when it's hard to value an asset class, you say that you turn to technical analysis. And technical analysis is interesting because the price really factors in everything, all the fundamental news, the sentiment, the momentum, all of that is factored into technical analysis. How do you utilize both the fundamental side when you're looking at an asset class and the technical to decide, is this a fundamental news event? Because a lot of times news gets tacked onto a technical move after the fact, or is it truly just a technical breakout? And using cryptos as an example here.
Yeah, no, you raise a good point. So I think we all have our own ways of, you know, of trying to deal with that kind of issue of trying to match the fundamentals and technicals. You know, I'm old enough to remember when fundamentalists and technicians were always at odds with each other. And now I think the more sophisticated people I know try to incorporate both of them. Fundamentals might help us identify the underlying trend, the macroeconomic forces. But I find technical analysis helpful in helping to tell me when I'm going to be wrong. And this is, I think, the difference between successful traders and less successful traders, is really managing the risk, managing the downside. Where to put a stop, how to evaluate, like what's the risk reward, where's your stop relative to what's your profit objective. And I don't think the macros help us very much in determining those kinds of things. So when I'm looking at the Bitcoin, for example, not only have we taken out that 2 month downtrend, but it looks like we bottomed around the time the dollar did last year, October, November kind of period. And so I think that we're correcting higher. And you know, my example would be using Fibonacci numbers. You take a cat and you throw it off the top of a skyscraper, and it gets down to the pavement, it's going to bounce. How high does it bounce before you think the cat's alive? And the first retracement, the first level that it bounces to in Fibonacci numbers is 38.2%. That would bring Bitcoin up to about $36,000. And I think that seems to be a reasonable objective, given the turn that we've had. Given the idea that people are becoming more skeptical again of this tension between central banks saying they're going to raise interest rates, the weakness in the stock market, maybe crypto is a place to hide out while the stock market corrects lower. So I think this is why trading is partly an art and not a science, is that trying to balance these technical influences, momentum, market positioning, chart patterns, with the underlying macroeconomics, which drives the price of money, interest rates, and currency.
All right, Mark, we're going to wrap it up here. We need to jump on another call, but always great chatting with you. Thanks for quickly recapping kind of what we saw this week in terms of the data, some of the news, and also how you balance out what you use to look at markets. And, well, technicals are one thing, but yes, also looking at underlying economics and fundamentals, whole other ballgame. Mark, thank you as always for your time. We'll chat next week. I hope you have a great weekend.
Thanks, guys. Have a good weekend and good luck to everybody.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.